education.
Oh, we talked about that. We did a little bit. What kind of schooling did you go to?
To grade school. I didn't go to high school or anything. I started on the fourth, and I just started on the fourth grade. Then I got kicked out of school. I said, I told you that, didn't I?
Yeah, you already told us that one. That's a pretty good story. I laugh a lot about that.
Yeah. About that flower bucket or plants.
Have you talked about your
mother
being last time we quit?
It was lots of fun for me, but I realize nowadays that I did wrong. She looked up, and then by the time I pulled a little hard on the string, she looked up. She found out that the water was coming up from that bucket up over her head, and she got the full force of water in her face.
Gee. So, maybe we talk about the 40s a little bit.
What?
What was going on in the 40s up here? They're having a big war outside?
Oh, the war?
Yeah, World War II. How did that affect you?
Well, didn't. Did I tell you about the time I was over in St. Michael's?
No.
I think I wrote that. I told someone about that. I tried to enlist, although I was 14 years old, or 13 or 14. I enlisted. There was a post at St. Michael's. I went to me and this Eskimo boy. Well, let's join the army. I said, we sailed over to St. Michael's in the winter. Over sail and sled. There's all glare ice along the coast, and we had bone runners. We had a hole in the sail to for watch out. We scooted over there in no time. We had fair wind. Gee, I thought I told you about that.
No. Not at all.
I told someone else at 10, or I guess, last spring. And there the officer said, you look pretty young to enlist in the army. Well, I may be young, but I was of age, I told him. And he said, your father and mother living? I said, yeah, my stepfather and my stepmother is living here at New Lasso. I didn't realize that they would send a telegram to them. When I discovered that they sent a telegram to Bill Dahlquist at New Lasso, gee, I got scared and I beat it back to Unalakleet to herd reindeer some more. And I didn't know that the old man would wire back to St. Michael's that I was pretty small for my age, but he'd get in the army all right.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. When they told me they're going to send a telegram to the old man at New Latitude, I got scared and beat it. And this last World War, they sent me a 4F card, one of the worst cards that the fellow could ever receive.
What'd they do that for?
Well, they said I had too large a family. Like I said, I had 9 boys and 9 girls in my family. And that's all I can claim.
There might be a couple others scattered here and there, though, I bet.
No, dozens of them.
That's why they call you the father of the Yukon, huh?
Like, is this what they call me?
Let's see. What else can I give you? Well, it seems like you got a lot of grandkids right now.
Yeah.
All ages, you know. But if you had something that, I mean, if you wanted to say something to them, like, or give them some kind of advice about what they ought to do or what they could do with their life, what kind of thing would you say to them?
I never gave that a thought. Since they're married, they're of age, I quit advising them. And so is the old lady, Mrs. McCarty. She once in a while, someone would ask her some questions, I think. And she tell them what is right and wrong. She must have told some of these boys when they were doing wrong. She tell them. Me, I never had time to advise my kids. The girls especially, they were brought up by they were advised by the old lady. And the boys, I was dealing with the boys. I told them off whenever they did wrong. I told them they'd done something wrong. And that's all I would tell them. I wouldn't be mad at them or treat them harsh. And Morris can say that too. He's the youngest in the, or I think the girl is younger than he is. I'm pretty sure. The last one I had was a girl. She was down here a few days ago. What the heck was she down here for? Oh, a wedding. When the time Peter, or Emmett Peters, married. She was down 7th or 8th of this month. Or 4th of the month.
Well, now for those girls, did your wife try to teach them any kind of the Indian ways?
Oh, she did. She taught them all how to sew and do housework. And they cut a lot of fish too. Clara and Regina, they both cut a lot of fish. Like I said, I had everything up to date in the fish camp. I built a big cutting raft where they could, and a table on it, and space to lay the fish, and racks on that cutting raft.
Did they learn a language?
What?
Did they learn how to speak in Indian?
Oh, they naturally spoke in Indian. At them days, everybody was talking Indian language. They mostly have forgotten that language. I think Claire and Eleanor down here, and Margaret down at Glena, they all can talk Indian yet. Them ones at Tanner, the youngest one, she doesn't talk a word of Indian, but she understands quite a bit.
Do you talk in Indian with them when you go to visit?
Yeah. They understand me.
Which language do you like best, Indian or English?
I like both languages. When I was there, it's most handy for me to talk in native. I talk in native. Especially when I don't want other people to know what we're talking about. You've seen Claire?
Yeah.
You had to talk with her. It's the same as you do with me?
Not yet. I think we might maybe talk with her a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, she tell you everything that I said was true.
Yeah, she really respects you a lot. Well, how is it these days now that a lot of the younger kids don't speak in native anymore?
They don't speak in native hardly. It's all English. If they go to school, like Mount Edgecombe or some schools at Anchorage. What the hell you call that school? There's been a lot of schools. I forgot now what school Clara went to, and Regina and Margaret and Eleanor. Some went to outside near Seattle. what I forgot the name of that school too.
So, what do you think that, what difference does that make that people don't speak in native anymore?
Well, for the reason that they don't talk it.
Do you think that's worse for them?
Yeah, I often wish they could all talk in native. Keep up their custom.
Are
there some things that you can say in native that's hard to say in English?
Yeah. I can't translate some words. And when I was a kid, I talked nothing but Indian. I didn't know a word of English. When I was about 4 or 5 or 6, I talked straight Indian. I learned the English language from the old man. My stepfather, he taught me at home in these roadhouses that we stayed in, winter and summer. When I went to school first, I went into the second grade. He got books for me and everything. He learned me to figure, arithmetic, and read and writing. That's why he told me, well, you better, when I quit school, he says, just as well that you quit school, but you better work. You can work from now on, he said. And I said I'd work. Some work was pretty hard for me, but I withstood them. Like mining, that was the hardest work I ever did. My hands were all blistered. I couldn't work with gloves on. Picking my own dirt and a wheelbarrow load up the wheelbarrow, and I wore a battery lamp on my head. I had to fill up the wheelbarrow and bring it to the hoist and empty my load into the bucket in so many minutes. And I was working underground for about 80 to 84 feet. Ten hours a day. It got so I couldn't get a hold of a pick or a shovel or wheelbarrow handles. My hand would be all busted up. But like I said, we lived good. We had every 6 hours, and the grub was good. And our bed was, we got plenty of sleep. I worked there about a month and a half. But the other boys around here, Ruby, they worked 2 weeks or 1 week, and they all quit. Well, two, three of the fellas worked with me out there. They couldn't work over that time.
What year was that?
That's just since 1923 to... '28. It was in the winter of 1926 or 27, or I don't remember the dates exactly where I worked. Where I worked over there for Denny Coyle. She's dead now, but his wife is living in the Pioneer home. She was a cook, and she had everything on the table. His daughter is living yet. They had only one daughter. I tried a little bit mining. Like I said, a master of all trades. Oh, jack of all trades, but master of none. The only thing I had was reindeer herding. I learned the whole thing in that line of work completely. I could make sausages. Everything out of the reindeer. I learned, as I worked with the Lapps, and they lived their the way they're accustomed, and I learned all their ways of living. We ain't on tape right now, are we?
Yeah, we're still going.
Well, that's all right.
You know, I'm still curious about when you're trapping over here on in the 40s. You're going up to your trap line every winter?
30s and 40s?
Yeah. What kind of things happened out there? You ever fall in the river or anything like that?
No, not once. Falling in the river, I fell in once that I know. That's the day I was reckless. I was running down a moose, and the moose crossed over the river above. And I crossed, that's my own fault too, Jews. I started to jump, the river was open in the midwinter. And I thought I could jump across. I did make it all right, but in jumping across, I landed on the other side, and the ice broke with me. And put near the current took me under. But I managed to get out. You take some streams, just gravel bottom, and they're open. Whenever it gets cloudy weather, the river opens up. It's not safe. And I got my moose all wet, and I kept running up the bank, and I crossed over a portage, and I got the moose. I wasn't the fast runner, but I was pretty good.
What'd you do then?
I skinned the moose and I dried up there.
You built a fire?
Mm-hmm. I kept my matches in a metal match case. I look for that. Anytime we get in the match couldn't keep in our pockets. We kept our matches in a metal case at all times, because we couldn't tell when we were going to fall in the river or something. That we kept our matches dry.
Well, you caught a lot of marten over there.
Yes.
How did you do that?
In traps, in deadfalls.
How did you make your deadfalls?
By this boy that was with me, his name was Merle. He was good at making them. I'd be in bed reading. He can't read at all. And in order for him to pass the time away, he'd make these figure four deadfalls. He'd make them out of straight green timber. It's a piece of stick, about a foot long or less than that. And he'd notch into another the piece that holds the logs up, the timber. He'd drive a couple of sticks in the snow, and he'd lay one log down on the ground, a pretty heavy log, about 3-4 feet long. And the upper one would be up above, about 6 inches, or anything put near that. And as soon as the marten comes along, he sees the bait on the end of this stick that holds the upright up, and he'd be torn away on that. And first thing you know, he's caught around the belly, and he can't wiggle out of that between those two logs. We had lots of those sets. Yeah, but the reason why I paid up that bill, Tom Devane's, in 1 year, the price come up pretty high for marten that winter. We got $125 each for our pelts that year.
$125 for each marten?
Yeah. See, that's the reason why. Oh, the fellows who outfitted me, they knew that I can work once I get out. That they trusted me anything I wanted, and as much as I wanted. I remember the NC company, they outfitted me 1 or 2 years, and another store, that store is burnt down now. Carbone, his name was, he died outside. And Tom Devane, He was a leading merchant for miners and prospectors and trappers. I worked for him quite a lot, off and on.
Well, when you got all those marten, when did you skin them?
We skinned them at the camp, whichever camp we worked from. We had sight lines. We snowshoed. I've been out till 3 o'clock in the morning, in the pitch dark. But I'd have flashlights. I'd get a case of these batteries. And that lasted me part of the winter. Maybe I'd buy some more through the winter. But by that time the days get longer and I make my trap lines in the daytime. But on the short days, that's when I use a flashlight.
When you skin those marten, do you skin them through the mouth or the other way?
I skin them both. But I skin them through the mouth and the tail end. I skin marten two ways. Whichever came to my mind, I skin them that way.
You keep the toenails on?
Yeah. On marten and fox, bears. Well, I don't think I left the toenails on the wolves. Everything has to have their toenails. The woman wears some outside, they get some cape or something to wear. They got to scratch their back once in a while. That's what they use the toenails for.
I always wondered why they had to have those.
I don't see what was the reason why they had to have their toenails, except for scratching.
How did you come down in the spring? You drive your dogs in?
Sometimes I came down by boat, sometimes I came over the trail. I generally come in early in April when I'm all through trapping beaver or martens or fox or anything. I'd come in with the dogs. Some springs, very few springs I came down with a boat. The first 2-3 springs I was up there, I came down in the boat. We built a boat up there up that river, and we come down in it.
How'd you build that boat?
We built it ourselves by watching other people how they built their boat. And we set up. Same way with making sleds or canoes or boats. Just go look at another boat and copy that.
You whipsaw that lumber?
Yeah. Whipsaw the lumber and plane it with a jack plane. Yeah, I built 3-4 boats up there at Slatna.
How do you caulk those seams?
What?
How do you fix up those seams? You caulk the seams?
We let our lumber dry and very little cotton I used. I used oakum or boat cotton. But I didn't have to use very much cotton because I seasoned my lumber before I built. And we have boat clamps, and the boats I built, they're pretty tight.
How many clamps do you have to have?
Oh, two at the most. We clamp where we're going to. We nail the board together, and then we put the clamp over it, and we move that clamp ahead. And nail them on to the bottom piece. There's quite a bit to that. I can't explain. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I watched other boats being built and how they're built and everything, and I copied it.
Worked out pretty good for you?
Yeah. Never had to bail water, hardly. Before I used to come down, one spring especially that I remember, I come down on a raft. We went out in the spring of the year with dog team. I and a fellow named Edward Clarence, he's dead now too. And he told me that he knew all that country where I was going. That's before I bought the trap line. And I said, if you know that country real well, I said, how about going up with me and I'd buy all the groceries. And he agreed, and you get half of the fur, I told him. I thought he'd know the country, and he was worth it. Gee whiz, I come to find out that he didn't know one lake where another lake was. Gee, I had to hunt every lake and pack my canoe around the country. I still lived up to my promise. I gave him half, although he wasn't worth it. That's Charlie Carlo and Frank. Frank is dead now. Charlie is living yet. They come out of the river above us, and he met some of the boys, three, four of the boys up the river that were camped up about 10 miles above us. He got to their, they got to their camp, and they said that we were ready to pull out any time. And I had a raft. There, I killed some caribou meat. I killed some caribou. I dried them all, and I saved all my beaver casters or beaver meat, beaver carcasses. I saved the casters too. We were selling them at $5 a pound. The stores were. Some traders were buying beaver casters. I don't know what they were buying them for. I think it's They made something like perfume or something.
Do you like a drink of water?
No.
So then, what happened after that? You guys were going to come down in that raft?
Yeah, well, they kept coming night and day to overtake us. We wasn't down at the first canyon yet. Gee, I built a strong raft, a double deck. I cut fish wheel poles for myself. I've seen some beautiful poles up there at Mount Slatin, and I cut them down. And I made a deck. And I had built racks on that raft to hang up my beaver meat on. And so some days I was a working maniac. I'd sit down to skin beaver and find a good place to sit up against a tree, and have my rifle or shotgun. And in fact, I had the shotgun on each side of me and the rifle. And in time I heard a goose coming, they fly low. I'd shoot them right where I'm sitting from while I'm skinning my beaver. And I'd pluck them. When I get through, I'd pluck the goose, and I said to, I had a candy bucket that I salt them in. I took some rock salt up in the that spring. Here we have geese meat, fresh, ducks, and beaver meat, half dried. They taste better when they're half dried. I know at that time Charlie and his brother come along in canoes. They had nothing but beaver skins and their bedding. And they had one bottle of Tabasco sauce between them. Charlie will tell you that. And Frank Carlo, he was a fellow like I was. He knew the ways of the country, and he could live out in the country. He decided they were both going to go, and they had canoes, and we were on raft. And I made a place to row on it. We traveled night and day. And Frank Carlo said, "I'm going to stay with Bill. I don't mind the work. His share of the work." We made a little rule on board my raft ship that we'd row 2 hours each every 6 or 8 hours. It's come our turn again. Well, I wound up with four passengers I took on board. They seen that I had all kinds of grub, and these trappers from Tanner, they come out of the Tanner side of the river. There's one fellow living here, David Elia, and the other fellow, George Yerke, he's gone. He died of drowning at Old Station, below Tanner.
Okay, go ahead.
By golly, we just kept coming night and day. We had a stove on board my raft ship.